Dear listeners, Sai Ram. We now bring you Vahini Satsang. Today's episode was first aired on the 27th April 2017 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang, our weekly series, the last segment on Thursday, where we discuss on the stream of beautiful messages that Bhagwan wrote for all mankind painstakingly for decades. And it started with Prema Vahini way back in the 50s. And today, by Bhagwan's immense grace, we have in the studios the much revered Sanjay Sahani sir, someone who has basked in the divine physical presence of Bhagwan for decades, and under his direct direction and supervision has mentored hundreds of students as a teacher, as a lecturer, as a warden of the Prashanthi Nilayam campus, as a director of the Vrindavan campus, and now as the controller of examinations of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. He is someone from whom every student has learned something or the other about how to lead a Sai way of life. So really very grateful to Bhagwan for this episode of Vahini Satsang. A warm welcome to you, sir, for this episode of Vahini Satsang.
Thank you, Bishu. Sai Ram.
So, we have been discussing the Vahini chapters. We have done 7 chapters. So, today we will begin with the 8th chapter. I'll play the first paragraph of the 8th chapter and then we'll move on.
Sure.
సత్యమే దేవుడు. వీటినన్నింటినీ సాధించుట కొరకు తెలుసుకొనుటకు నైతికత అనే బలమైన పునాది కావలను. సత్యాసత్య వివేచన చేయుచు ఎల్లప్పుడూ సత్యమునే గ్రహించవలను. సారాసార విచారణ ద్వారా సారమునే పొందవలను. చిప్పలను పారవేసి ముత్యములనే గ్రహించు చందమున జీవితమును ప్రారంభించవలను. తరువాత స్వప్రయత్నం, ఈశ్వర కృప, వీని బలంతో పురోగమించవలను. ఈ సాధనయందు దేహము నుండి ఆత్మను వేరుచేయు అభ్యాసము చేసినచో అది మనకు చాలా సహకారి అగును. మనము ఏ విచారణ చేయుటకును మొదట సత్యాసత్య విచారణ చేయుట సర్వశ్రేయస్సు. ఆ విచారణ ప్రతి లౌకికమునందు కాని వ్యావహారికమునందు కాని ఇక ఏ చిన్న విషయమందైనను సరే అది అవసరం. సృష్టి, స్థితి, లయము అన్నియును ఆ సత్యము వలననే జరుగుచున్నవి. సత్యమే తాను. సత్యమును కనుగొంటిమన్నా సర్వేషునే తెలుసుకుంటిమి.
ట్రూత్ ఇస్ గాడ్. ఫర్ నోయింగ్ యాజ్ వెల్ యాజ్ అచీవింగ్ ఆల్ దీస్, వాట్ ఇస్ నీడెడ్ ఇస్ ద ఫార్మిటబుల్ ఫౌండేషన్ కాల్డ్ ఎథికల్ లైఫ్. వన్ షుడ్ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ డిస్క్రిమినేట్ బిట్వీన్ ట్రూత్ అండ్ అన్ట్రూత్ అండ్ ఆల్వేస్ టేక్ ద ట్రూత్ త్రూ ఎన్క్వైరీ ఇన్ టు వాట్ ఈస్ ఆఫ్ ఎసెన్స్ and what is not. One should seek to attain that which is of essence. Just how one discards the shells and preserves the pearls, life too should begin in this manner. Later, by the strength of one's self-effort and divine grace, one should march ahead. During this exercise, if one practices to segregate the body from the Atma, that would be of immense benefit to us. Before we undertake any inquiry, it is highly propitious for us to first inquire into what is truth and what is untruth. This inquiry is always necessary, be it a worldly or a practical life issue, or even any small issue for that matter. Creation, sustenance and dissolution, everything happens only because of truth. He is truth. That is why, once you know the truth, it is as good as knowing the Supreme One.
So something very profound here, and Bhagwan says that for knowing as well as achieving all this, what is needed is this formidable foundation called ethical life. And by all these, Swami is referring to what he talked about in the previous chapter. And if you see the content of chapter 7, Bhagwan was referring to Yajna. Swami was started off by saying that we define jnana or wisdom as knowing, but that is not what is knowing. Knowing is only when, just like food which is assimilated and it converts into energy, and only when it nourishes the body can you call it real food. So only when the jnana is absorbed and it's assimilated, and when you use discrimination and while using the karmendriyas and gyanendriyas, only then we can call that wisdom. So that's what he talks about in the first paragraph of 7th chapter. And then he moves on where he talks about yajna. And he says that every activity which is done with a spiritual intent is yajna. And then he goes on to say how yajna enables equality in creation, equality in society, equality in one's body. And also one very interesting thing that Bhagwan says is, when you're doing service activities, do not encourage the desire for fruits of the action, because you are already blessed with the fruits. Swami says the very fact that you are getting a chance to do service itself means that you are only working to fulfill your indebtedness. So we can never ever think that, you know, we are doing service and now we'll get a fruit. The very fact that you're getting a chance means there is so much of work that you have to do, because already there are a lot of debts that you owe to so many around you and to the divine. So this is what Bhagwan shares in the 7th chapter. And now Swami says, for knowing and achieving all these, what is needed is a formidable foundation called ethical life. And then he goes on to talk about, we have to discriminate between what is truth and untruth. We have to inquire into what is of essence and what is not. In fact, the other day I was just reading one discourse, and Swami was saying that some people say this is real, that is not real, dream is real, waking state is unreal. Swami says, all this is just mithya. Don't tell real, unreal. This is just mithya. That's all Swami says. I think Sanskrit is very difficult to really translate. So, what are your thoughts, sir, on living such a life where you are constantly trying to discriminate between truth and untruth? Can we lead such a life where we are all the time able to, as Swami says, discard the shell and only look at the pearl?
Bhagwan would often refer to Adi Shankara's famous quote, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya.
Yes.
In fact, the popular prayer that we chant almost daily from the Upanishads, Asato Ma Sat Gamaya. So what is that Sat and what is Asat? In fact, Bhagwan would underline this fact that to call it untruth is not the correct meaning or nomenclature.
Mm-hmm.
It is a graduation from partial truth to the whole truth.
Okay.
And he used the imagery of a cinema screen, you know, which
yes,
we are very familiar with. So you go to the cinema
right
theater or to the multiplex, and then you have this blank screen in front of you.
Yes.
Till the projection of the movie starts, you just see the blank screen.
Yes.
And when the movie starts, you don't see the wide screen. You are just seeing the images.
Yes.
And the images are continuously coming and going, coming and going. Are the images real? As long as the image is there in front of you, it is there.
Yes.
It is in existence. But the next moment, when from the screen that particular image of, say, a tree or a person moves out, it is not there anymore. So that is why it is mithya. It is there for some time. After some time, it will not be there. But what is always there is the screen, which is the basis
yes
of the images. And that is why Swami says that the jagat is mithya, because it is there for some time. It was not there yesterday, it is there now, tomorrow it will not be there. What is truth? Bhagwan would often define it, trikala bhagyam satyam.
Yes.
That which is there in the past, is there in the present, and will be there in the future. That alone is the truth. In fact, I remember way back in the mid-80s, in a message to the student study circle in our hostel here at Prashantilayam, Swami sent us this message, a part of which reads like this. Seshasai means he who rests on Shesha the serpent. Satyasai means he who rests on Satya the truth. Those who live without understanding the truth are blind.
Oh.
So when Swami says that, you know, always focus on what is eternal and what is transient, you know, which he referred to in this passage also, the body and the
yes
spirit or the atma.
Yes.
The body is transient, but the atma will always be there. And he always lived in that consciousness. Those of us who had the opportunity to be in his proximity, we realize that he was always in that consciousness, and once in a while, suddenly he will make a revelation. And you find that the person who's in front of you is looks like you, talks like you, but
yes
is not
yes
not the way you think and you yes relate to.
Yes.
I remember we were in Kodaikanal with Bhagwan, and one evening he had asked one of his devotees, Jindrani, to speak in the public assembly. So after that meeting was over, we came inside Bhagwan's residence and he was sitting with us. So he looked at Jindrani in the course of his conversation. He asked her, Jindrani, how old are you? And very rarely I find a devotee would respond like that. But this was her response. Jindrani replied, Swami, I am 5 months younger to you.
Oh.
And seeing her spontaneous response, all of us burst out laughing. Swami also laughed. And then, when the laughter died down, Swami had the last word. He said, you are not younger to this body. You are not younger to me. You are younger to this body. I am ageless. So when he uttered that I am ageless, he was speaking from that divine consciousness state which he always is in.
Right.
Always is in. In fact, once I remember he was speaking to devotees in the Sai Ramesh Hall in Vrindavan, and he mentioned that the reason why man gets rebirth is because he commits a crime, a very serious crime. In the spiritual world, it's a very serious crime, and for which the capital punishment that is awarded is to be reborn again. And he said that crime that man commits is to have body consciousness.
My God.
Because you have body consciousness, you have to be reborn again.
I wish the Fair and Lovely advertisement, they get to know this.
So, but you know, the master that Swami is, he will give us the problem.
Yes.
He will give us the solution also. He gives us the diagnosis. He prescribes the medication as well. And he said, the only way you will be able to transcend this body consciousness is by dedicating every action of yours to the divine.
Right. Wow.
So when you cultivate that, that's why, you know, when he refers to the previous chapter's message of Yajna, you know, I was reminded of this particular message which he gave us. So, when you, after all, what is Yajna? You are, whatever you do, you are offering it to the divine.
Correct. Mm.
And yes, once that feeling seeps into your thought, your words, into your actions, then this body consciousness slowly, slowly declines, and without your knowledge, one day will drop away.
Wow.
So, Bhagwan reminds us that, you know, don't forget, smara nitya anityatam.
Yes,
you know, he used to say.
Yes, he used to say that.
Smara nitya anityatam. Yes. So what is eternal?
Yes.
What is transient?
Yes.
Not that he wanted us to run away to the Himalayas and live in the caves. He wanted us to be in society.
Yes.
But head should be in the forests.
Yes.
Do not forget the purpose for which you are born.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So that is the message.
Yes. In fact, as you were narrating this, I was just thinking, how can we practically live this in our day-to-day life? You know, I am, for example, walking on the road. How can I constantly keep thinking that, you know, I am not the body, I am the Atma? Is it feasible? I am driving, you know, I am cooking. And it just occurred to me, as I said, suppose I am walking on the road, and if I think I am not the body, for example, so it can happen that someone who is coming from the opposite direction, and for some reason he did not look at me, and I have every reason to feel upset. I can feel that, why is it, am I treated like this? Why can't he just look at me and smile? Why can't he be a little more courteous? You know, I can think about so many things which can upset me. Why am I treated like an untouchable? What did I do? And I thought, if I think that I am the body, then I will have all these things affecting me. Or suppose that person smiled, then I can feel very happy about it. Of course he will look at me. I mean, I am a radio jockey. I'm serving in Swami's radio. Obviously, people respect me. You know, I can feel so high about myself. Again, because I associate myself with the body. Suppose I don't associate myself with the body, then perhaps,
if he smiles, I am okay. And if he does not smile also, I feel okay, fine. I am not the body in any case. I was just thinking, is it really feasible to really live this principle in daily life? What do you think, sir? Can we follow this? Suppose, you know, traffic happens, you're stuck in the car.
I mean, just one incident which comes to my mind, because sir was saying that you should offer everything to the Lord. Possibly a precursor to that, you know, approach would be to believe that the Lord knows everything.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Possibly once you know that the Lord knows everything, yes, then you will want to offer. Selectively, you don't feel like, okay, Swami, today I was a good boy, offer today to you. You know, and so many words which are coming in this paragraph.
Yes.
Sir mentioned revelation.
Correct.
And there is a word ethical.
Yes.
And there is this word truth.
Yes.
You know, one incident comes to my mind.
Yes.
Like sir was saying, Swami is one who rests on Satya.
Mm.
So it was way back in our school days, Swami called some of the music boys for an interview, and I was the youngest there, and I was there, and it was new for me in the sense that I was with the music group and all that. Then Swami pulled up one of the boys and Swami said, "A bad boy." And he said, "Swami," the most innocent face, and Swami said, "Darjeeling mein kya hua?" Then
what happened in Darjeeling?
What happened in Darjeeling? And he said, "Swami, nothing." Swami said, "Sach bolo, tell the truth." And the embodiment of truth. And with all his innocence, he's saying, "Swami, nothing happened. Tell the truth." Swami will not tell anything. You tell the truth. Then he said, "Swami, nothing." Then Swami went one step further. Swami said, "What happened in the hotel?" He was still saying, "Swami, which hotel?" "Swami, nothing happened." Swami said, "Tell the truth, otherwise I will tell everybody." Then still he was playing defending himself, and then Swami said, "I think it's time to..." So Swami said, "Dekho, you were coming from the staircase from up, and she was coming from down." In the middle, what happened? "Swami, please forgive me." So here there is truth, there is ethical, there is revelation, and there is omniscience.
Mm.
So possibly, in a sense, if, you know, yes, to meet somebody you like may not be inappropriate, but Swami says, as long as you are a student, you have to live like a student, and then you should not let your thoughts wander. So that's what Swami is trying to drive home there. At the same time, if he was aware, and if like all of us can be aware that Swami knows everything,
yes,
possibly then we will be able to think before we act. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Actually, when we talk of truth, we also cannot help but seeing how the truth translates into action.
Yes. Yes.
Satyam nasti paro dharma.
Yes.
There is no
dharma.
Right action
other than
truth. So when your thought, word and deed, they all become one, that is the highest truth, and that is also the highest dharma. Sometimes, you know, we become little philosophical, we may become little apparently spiritual. There was this student in the hostel. So one day he said, "Sir, this studies is all Maya. Why should we do all this?" And
education for living.
Yes. So I don't think it is so important, and therefore I don't think I should be wasting my time on studies.
Mm. On physics, chemistry and all that.
So, the warden was really at his wit's end, because the parents have sent the students to the university with their own aspirations that they'll come out successful. Not that they don't expect them to be good human beings. Of course, that is one of the outcomes of Bhagwan's education system. But also that they will, whatever courses they are pursuing, they'll be successful in the same. And here is a student who says that, "I don't want to study." So the warden was racking his brains, and then suddenly he got this brain wave. Every day, when in the dining session, he would go to the dining hall, before the dining session starts and the serving starts at the counter, he would find that the same boy would be at 1.1, you know, first in the queue. So he said, yes, studies is, you know, an illusion. It is Maya. Mm. But so is your food in the dining hall. So why are you so eager to have that food? So what I mean to say is that, you know, we tend to use convenient philosophy.
Right.
And whatever suits us at that point of time, we try to apply it to us. What is not suitable, we say, oh, this is not for us, this is meant for others, or I'm not so evolved, or whatever. But that is not what Swami wanted. He said, at whatever level you are, at whatever level you are, you practice truth in the way you relate to at that point of time. Because truth, if it has to be the basis of ethical life, one should realize that truth is the greatest purifier. No matter what great mistake you have made in life, if you accept that, yes, I made that mistake, whether you tell it to the world or you don't tell it to the world, but within yourself you tell yourself, yes, this is a mistake, then you are on the course for correction. In fact, I remember there was a doctor in a super speciality hospital here at Prashantlim. Once he asked Bhagwan this question, Bhagwan, how many sins do you forgive? So he thought, you know, there should be some cutoff limit up to which all of us are safe and beyond which, you know, you are beyond redemption. So he posed this question to Bhagwan, and Bhagwan said, as many sins as you commit.
My God.
My God.
Wow. But then he put a condition, a rider, provided you sincerely repent for the mistakes you have made. In fact, he wouldn't use the word sin, he would use the word mistake. You made mistake. In ignorance, you have made the mistake.
Yes. Wow.
And there's this beautiful episode which happened in the mandir here at Prashantilam. Bhagwan was walking amidst the devotees for darshan. And it so happened that there was this very huge, fat gentleman. And he was desperately trying to give a letter to Bhagwan. And he was successful. And so he was very delighted.
Mm-hmm.
After a few paces, Bhagwan walked. And this gentleman saw from a distance that that envelope which he gave Bhagwan had dropped into the lap of a sadhu.
Oh.
So Bhagwan went inside, devotees got up, and this gentleman walks up to the sadhu and says, that letter is mine, please return it to me. The sadhu said, Bhagwan gave me this, so I'm not going to give it to anybody. So there was a small quarrel there, and the Sevadal arrived at the scene. So when the Sevadal made his inquiry, he found that there was the root of the problem was Bhagwan. How are you going to solve the problem? So he was racking his brains how to resolve this problem. And this gentleman was saying, see, I have written very personal and private things in the letter. I don't want anybody else to read it. It's between me and Bhagwan. And the sadhu would say, no, but Bhagwan has given me this. Why I should give it to anybody else? So then the Sevadal got a brainwave and he requested the sadhu. He said, sir, no doubt Bhagwan gave you the envelope, but there is a letter inside.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing to do with the letter. So I request you, the letter inside, please return to this person. You keep the envelope.
Wow.
So the sadhu was, you know, he readily agreed to this proposal. Mm-hmm. And so the letter, the envelope was opened, and what came out was a blank sheet of paper.
Oh.
And when that gentleman saw his letter was a blank sheet of paper, he started weeping. He was a huge, burly gentleman. He started weeping. And people asked him, why are you weeping? And through his tears he said, I have committed so many sins in my life, and I had written it in that letter, and I was praying, Bhagwan, if you forgive me, please take this letter of mine.
My God.
So by seeing that blank sheet of paper, this person felt he got the message, past is past, from today onwards, lead a new life. So this was the story with the gentleman who had given the letter. Then the Sevadal found that the envelope was not yet empty. So he put his hands in it and he found some amount there. And when they counted, they suddenly discovered the sadhu started crying now because he was praying to Bhagwan. He had come apparently on his journey and reached Prashantalayam. And he wanted to return to his native village. He had no money for the return fare. The exact amount of his return fare was there in the envelope. Wow. And this person said, no, I have, that is not my money, I cannot touch it. Hmm. And so the envelope remained with him. And the Sevadal had this wonderful sight to see simultaneously both a sinner and a saint, you know, rejoicing in tears. So, truth is a great purifier.
Wow.
Even if we have done the greatest sins in the world, God is willing to forgive us, provided we accept that, yes, this is a mistake I made, and from now onwards, I will lead a good life, a pure life, and that is what truth prompts you to achieve in life. So Swami used to say, Satya is my prachar, Dharma is my achar. When truth translates into action, then it becomes Dharma.
Beautiful. Amazing. In fact, as you were talking about these revelations and Swami being the truth, I was just reminded of what another very senior devotee who has lived with Bhagwan for nearly four decades. He was sharing this, that one of the evening darshan times, Swami came out early. This was in 2003-2004 when Bhagwan started coming in the golf cart and he would need little assistance to walk. So Swami came and Swami used to actually get down just in front of the stage, and as Bhagwan was trying to come out of the golf cart, that day since he had come early, the boys were not there, but this gentleman was there. And few days ago Swami had mentioned in the discourse how he fell down in the bathroom, and you know that's the reason why he was needing little assistance for walking. And Swami suddenly asked him, Padyana, did I fall? So this person was very taken aback. He didn't know if Swami was really asking him. And so he was perplexed. Swami again looked at him and, Chappu, Padyana, did I fall? And now he thought, yes, Swami is really asking me. Third time when he asked, then he started, when Swami asked, he started thinking what to answer. And then he said, Swami, no, Swami. He said, Swami, if you fall, the whole universe will come to a standstill, Swami. He said. And the moment Swami heard that, Swami said, correct answer. And then Swami took his hand, Swami got down the golf cart, took his hand, and taking his hand as help, Swami walked in the portico. He said, correct answer. When you are talking about these moments of revelation, moments when he parts that curtain about who he is, and then I think it is at these moments that we get purified. I think as you were saying, you know, love is that ultimate purifier. And when you are mentioning about this beautiful incident of the letter becoming empty, I remember when Swami in 2006-07 he stopped giving interviews. You know, not like in the earlier years where he used to every day spend 2-3 hours giving interviews. And I was a student and I had this funny thought. I thought, now what will happen to Swami's mission? I used to think, Swami is not giving interviews. I used to think, who will come now to Parthi? I mean, all these people whom we see in the veranda, all that, you know, high and mighty people, they are the people who are helping Swami's mission, you know. They are the people who, whatever it is at the practical level, you know, they bring in, they do the work, they bring in resources, whatever it is. And if Swami does not give interviews, who will come? And I used to get this feeling, Swami, please don't do this. And I remember sharing this with my brother once. I was very concerned. He said, what will happen to Swami's mission here? And he said, what is this? He said, Swami does not need to do anything. He just needs to come. If he's just sitting there, it is more than enough. And then sometime later, when I started doing heart-to-heart work, I remember reading this article about a lady from Greece. The whole article is, she had written, it was such a moving piece. She was sitting somewhere in the 200th row, I think, somewhere far behind. And the moment she saw Swami, she said she could not control and she was only crying and crying and crying. And this is again an experience that so many have had, right from students who have joined 11th class till people who are 70, 80 year old from coming from different parts of the world. They just see him and then something happens within and you just cry and cry and cry. And just like that letter became a clean slate, I think everybody's heart also becomes like that. It becomes a clean slate, you know. Everything just gets washed away and then you begin a new life. I think that's a very, very beautiful thing that Sir mentioned about truth being a purifier. And here Swami is telling that we should always lead our life, our practical life, always remembering that truth. And Swami says we should be able to practice the segregation of the body from the Atma. I think that is something that every devotee, every person who loves Swami's teaching should see how to make that work in their daily life, isn't it, sir?
In fact, you know, when the avatar comes, he teaches by his own example. You're talking of Swami's fall. I remember once in the year 1988, he stepped on a small soap in the bathroom in his residence here and he slipped and he had a hairline fracture on the hip. And after a few days, the devotees from Kerala had come and we were wondering whether Swami would address them, but he did come to the Purnachandra. We thought maybe Swami will sit on the chair and then speak, but he got up and he spoke. And in the course of his discourse, he said, you know, the kind of pain that this body is undergoing at this point of time, it is like an electric shock.
Yes,
and
I remember
that. It is not possible for any human being to bear that kind of pain, but yet you see me doing everything, including speaking to you. Why am I able to do it? Because I'm not thinking of the body at this point of time. I'm just looking at my devotees and the bliss that they are enjoying in my sannidhyam. And I have diverted my mind to that. And that is why the pain of the body doesn't affect me. And a few days later, he went to Vrindavan. And I still remember that we students in the hostel, the students and teachers wrote letters, get well letters to Bhagwan. And that brought us a beautiful letter in response from him.
Oh.
And in fact, he ends that letter by saying that my handwriting may not be legible because I'm not able to sit properly.
Fine.
So you can, but in spite of that, he wrote the letter. But the most beautiful part of the letter was the starting when he says, see, even in that condition, when he is not able to move around freely and is dependent on others, the opening stanza of his letter said, I am not the body, a bundle of bones, flesh and blood. I am not the mind, a bundle of wasteful desires, both manifest and unmanifest. I am not the feeling of infatuation which obstructs the way to liberation. I am the eternal Paramatman who knows that I am.
My God.
You know, with a hairline hip fracture, he could still speak to his students in that wavelength. So you know, I mean, we have seen it, we have heard it, and a little bit of that, you know, rubs on to you that if the Lord, when he came down as human, he did it, can we not bear a little bit about the problems and the challenges that we have in our day-to-day life in relation to the body, which you would often say in all these challenges of the world are like passing clouds.
Yes.
They're there today, tomorrow it will not be there.
Correct.
So he lived that. So that's a beautiful privilege that we had to watch him live his message. That's why he used to say, my life is my message. And that's what we have seen in his personality.
This whole thing about body consciousness and trying to relate to God as a form and being in the awareness that he's always with us. There was a talk by one of the spiritual masters. So when I was listening to him, then he was narrating. He said, Radha is such a great devotee, ultimate devotee of the Lord. And she is completely immersed in him. But she had to go through a lot of suffering because of one mistake. She did one mistake. And we were thinking, oh my God, what is that one mistake she did? That she had to go through a lot of suffering. He said, once in her entire life, she got a thought that maybe Krishna is not with me. For once. Once in her entire lifetime, she got a thought, oh, maybe Krishna is not with me. She said, that is the greatest mistake she did. And, I mean, we were with Swami physically, and the greatest boon and the greatest advantage we had is we found no contradiction in the fact that here is somebody who is standing outside of us, but is the same power who is inside us.
Yes.
And it is the same Swami responding from outside and the same Swami responding from inside. And in spite of that, we are still far away from reaching a state where we believe that he is always with us.
But he is.
He is.
Yes.
We should be in that awareness. That's what.
Yes.
So you need to keep reminding yourself. That's why it's so important to be in satsang.
Yes.
See, what happens is, Bhagwan says, especially when you're living in the world, why is it that we forget him?
Mm.
In fact, many times he has told us, you may forget me, I will never forget you.
Yes.
So, why we forget him, he gives this analogy that, for example, you are storing water in a mud pot in your room.
Mm-hmm.
And you fill the pot right up to the brim. And you go out of the house and come back after a few hours and you feel thirsty and you go to the pot and no one has been there in the home. The house is locked, but you find that the water level in the pot has gone down. And what's the mystery? The mystery is essentially that the water has evaporated. Why has the evaporation taken place? Because the environment inside the pot is different from the environment outside the pot. So when will the evaporation not take place? When, say for example, you keep the pot itself in water.
Mm.
So there is water inside, there is water outside, then evaporation will not take place. So Swami says that, you know, when you are in the divine presence, then you feel him and your thoughts are at a different orbit, at a different frequency. You feel his love. But then you go out into a worldly environment. The problem is not of you. The problem is also because of the environment.
Correct.
So what's the solution? The solution is that we must seek to be in daily satsang. So when you are in satsang, in holy company, you are constantly reminded of him, and with those thoughts, you know, you will find that God is very, very close to you. He is near and dear to you.
Right.
Yes. So whether it is through Radio Sai or it is through any spiritual gathering in the locality, or even it is at home, the family members get together and share a few moments thinking of Swami, thinking of God. Any God, I mean, for Swami, I remember once we were sitting at his lotus feet and he said, you know, for God there is no name and all names are his.
Yes.
He said, for example, you call him, hey Mike, you refer to Lord as the Mike, and he will respond to you as the Mike. And you say, oh, this tube light is God. Mm. And so you call him by referring to him as the tube light, and he responds, so all, yad bhavam tad bhaviti. With what feeling you call out to him, yes, he will respond to that. So therefore it's very important in our daily life to be in holy company, satsang, and with that you will find that the awareness of the truth,
yes,
is heightened. See, it's an awareness.
Correct.
It's not that you don't know, but knowing is not enough. To be aware and to live in that awareness like Swami lived, yes, see, that is the point.
Yes.
And that is why satsang is so important. And in the 9 paths of devotion,
yes,
you know, the first step is Shravanam.
Shravanam, correct.
You know, so that's what we are doing, we are listening to each other. And we are thinking of him.
Yes, correct.
And so, automatically the mind is transported to a different wavelength.
Sasangatve nisangatum.
Yes.
Nisangatve nirmohatam, nirmohatve nishalatatum. Nishalatatve jivan mukti.
Jivan mukti. So jivan mukti is when body consciousness just drops away.
One very nice thing Swami told here, sir, in this studio when he had come 2002, he said, you all should offer all your actions to God, you should offer every action to God and all that. Then he said, but if you want to do work, there is definitely a need to do work, knack is also required. Some kind of knack is required. And I remember very clearly in our school days, you know, Swami used to stand on the veranda just after the darshan and interview. He would stand on the veranda and just swing, and you know, some wonderful pearls would just float. And one day Swami asked, how many types of yoga are there? So everybody said Ashtanga Yoga. Not Ashtanga Yoga, sir. 9 types are there. Mm-hmm. So he said there are 9 types of yoga. All Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi. Idi A Patanjali's 8. 9th one is Knack Yoga.
he said
that. The 9th is a Knack Yoga. So, you know, I've still not got answers to what that knack is, but when Swami says here that in your day-to-day life, you have to start practicing the awareness, you have to start leaning back on that awareness that the body is different and the you are not the body, but you are the Atma. Possibly that is the knack. And to keep continuously that in our focus is the big challenge. And here again, just this example, there is this great realized soul, Nisargadatta Maharaj. We have read books about his talks and discussions. And he says his guru told him that. His guru told him that you are not this, you are God, you are divine. And he says, within 3 years, I realized myself. Mm-hmm. My guru told me and I believed in him. There was no doubt. My guru told me I am God, and then I believe. Then the questioner asks him, because this whole book, I Am That, is like, yes, a conversation. It's question and answers. So the person asking the question asks him, so what did you do exactly? And then he said, nothing much. Every time between 2 actions, I paused and I thought that I am not the body. And I am not the one who is doing these actions. I am the eternal witness. Then they ask, how is it possible? He says, very simple. You take food. You eat the food. But beyond that, what do you do? Are you responsible for the digestion? Are you responsible for anything vital for the existence of this body? Excretion, secretion, you know, circulation, respiration. Everything happens on its own. He says, just as you are able to comprehend the fact that the body operates on its own, your own body operates on its own, I am in the awareness that even my words and actions happen on their own.
Oh, wow.
We are able to comprehend a fact to a certain extent that, okay, things in the body are not completely in my control. Nobody can, otherwise who will never, nobody will have a heart attack. I mean, if it's in your complete control, why would anybody have a heart attack? Then it would just be like, hi, today I'm just leaving all of you. I chose to leave today, so I allowed a heart attack to happen. No, but it doesn't happen. So, he says, just as you are able to comprehend that your body is not in your complete control, I am in that awareness that even my actions and my words just happen. I am the witness. So when Swami is saying here, yes, you have to try to live in that awareness that you are the Atma and not the body. I think that's what it means.
Well, it needs definitely so much of practice. And you know, when you are mentioning about this NAC yoga, I don't know, maybe this is not what it is, but just one thought that came to me is, you know, we know of so many people who try their own ways of trying to remain connected with Bhagwan. For example, a software coder, you know, so what he does, so he has made this practice that, you know, every time he writes a few lines of the code, then he will just write something saying that it is dedicated to Bhagwan. You know, so he will write some mysterious code and nobody understands what is written, and because nobody understands, nobody bothers about it, and it does not change the software, but you know, he does it because that's the way he thinks. There is another person, you know, every time he gets an emoji, the emoticons on his WhatsApp or on his phone, then he thinks, okay, this is the time I have to think about Swami. I think people have developed their own ways of...
I wonder what a surgeon will think.
So I think every person really needs to carry that Prashantilayam, the ambience of Prashantilayam with them wherever they go. And that's how we can always be in satsang. And if you are all the time in satsang, then this thought process of segregating the body and the mind perhaps will become easier. And... Saiprakash, and sir, you are talking about satsang, and I was just thinking, today is April 27th, and yesterday was the 3rd anniversary day, the beautiful abode of Bhagwan in Vrindavan, and I was just reminded of how all the beautiful satsangs that we used to have in the lawns of
absolutely
3rd Vrindavan, and especially when Bhagwan was in Prashantinilayam, that was the way the students and the staff in Vrindavan used to connect to Bhagwan by having those satsangs in his abode, in that ambience, and used to conduct those satsangs. So it was really, really a very beautiful moment, even just thinking about those moments. And I think that's what Swami says when he says head in the forest. You just have to consciously think about those moments, then slowly... As Swami says, you cannot detach yourself from God. You can only attach yourself more to God. Then slowly the world will get detached. I think that is the process. Thank you so much, sir. I know we are running out of time. And I only pray to Bhagwan that we can have you in the future sessions of this beautiful Prema Vahini. We just did only one paragraph today.
Yes.
There is so much, and we are still not done. We can go on and on. I mean, every time you talk about Bhagwan, every person has so many beautiful perspectives. You can only feel grateful to him for every moment that he has given us to ruminate on him and to internalize him and experience that bliss of internalizing him. Thank you so much, sir. Dear listeners, so please do take your time out to open the pages of Prema Vahini and reflect on the chapter we are discussing now. If you have any queries, any comments, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We would be happy to share your comments, take your questions, and also narrate your experience of trying to live these teachings in real life. With gratitude to Bhagwan for blessing us with this invaluable opportunity to ruminate on his messages, we offer all the programs on this beautiful Thursday at his lotus feet. And sincere thanks to each one of you too, dear listeners, for being with us through this wonderful journey of living in Sai. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
You were listening to an episode of our program, Vahini Satsang. This episode was first aired on the 27th April 2017 as part of Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.